Well, past like hushed whispers of the fact that they existed as flesh and blood beings at one point, I don't think we know a ton about them still.
To forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
And Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
Welcome everybody. If you are new here, please hit like, share, subscribe, comment, all that kind of stuff. And if you're returning, we're glad you did. We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. Welcome everybody.
I'm so happy to be back. I missed you guys.
Well, we are happy to have you. On this show, we're going to talk a little bit about heavy intercessors and the best way to use them. We're going to talk about an absolute... is it shocking to the core of Necrons? The first, we have a currently unique thing spotted within the Necron, grouping?
Pod, lexicon.
Tomb? Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. I don't know where you want to start.
Heavy intercessors, man. Head scratcher.
So why do you say that? Because I think that at the base level that they're really good with three wounds and the toughness five. I mean, in a troop slot, that's...
Yeah, it feels like they're a little bit. I don't know how I feel about them. I'm trying to figure out how I feel about them. I suppose maybe talking it out on this show, I'll get a better understanding of what I think they can do and can't do. So, just talking about them quickly. So, movement 5, weapon skill to skill 3, strength 4, toughness 5, 3 wounds, 2 attacks, leadership 7, 3 up save, blah blah blah, extra leadership, extra attack on the Sarge. Can have up to six guys in the unit, so e.g. the same as Aggressors, same as Eradicators, all the other, the Grabbers. Yeah,
you got 10-man squad.
Six more models. Oh, you're absolutely right. Sorry, mate. Yeah. It says up to contain six or more models. My apologies. heavy bot rifle. What is that? Strength 36, rapid-fired 1, strength 5, minus 1, 1 damage. So it's a 1 damage heavy bolter, essentially. These guys, I feel like you need a specific list. I don't know why, but... Like it feels to me like they'll be a great, if you're working off patrols, they're going to be really good because you take your one super hearty troop choice, sit it back, long range fire support from a troop choice. It feels good, right?
I think so. You can equip them with a couple different weapons, and one of them being the Executor, heavy bolter, which is heavy 2, strength 5, neg 2, damage 3.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It is pretty good.
Yeah. That's one thing, but I think you need to have the list that they fit into. Like, I'm not going to take him in my chosen chapter. I think that they're, if you were to take them, they are 28 points apiece, and then 10 extra points for their like bonus weapon, better weapon or whatever.
Yeah.
At that point in time, they start to cannibalize points for things like Terminators or specifically Deathwing Terminators, talking about Dark Angels or, bikes in a White Scars army. I think you really have to have the right chapter to take advantage of these. And I think maybe then when is the time to do it?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the interesting bit there. So you compare them to say a regular intercessor. So he's paying 8 points for one more strength on your gun, on your basic gun, the bolt rifle. You're paying for, it's one more toughness and one more wound, but one less movement, which I suppose is a bit of a wash on a troop's choice that you don't expect to be very mobile.
Well, with a long range weapon too. So, you never need them to move really at all. I guess the only time you need them to move is if you did not deploy them near an objective.
That is true. And of course, these guys should literally just plonk at an objective and see how you're going. Yep. See if you can make it to me in time. You can't equip the sergeant with any melee weapons, can you?
Oh, I just flipped off that page. I'll get back.
If no model in this unit is equipped with a heavy bolter, you can take one of the following options. They have all the variants of the different bolters. So they have the assault bolter one, essentially the Hellstorm assault version, the Hellstorm heavy version. I think the heavy version, is that the executioner bot rifle? Yeah, that's the one. Strength 5 minus 2, 2 damage, 42 inch range on that one. And that's the same price. So you just pick the gun you like the most. I like that one the most.
That or the heavy 2 one or whatever, the damage 3. But I guess you only get one of those.
Oh, yeah, you only get one. You can have...
Look, if you don't plan on moving, then
that's your go.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I suppose if we're going to I mean, I don't want to talk about Dark Angels too much, but these guys make a lot of sense with Dark Angels.
You think so? You don't think they're cannibalizing points?
Everybody get out the bingo cards. Are we 5 minutes in yet, Paul?
Yeah, just barely.
Just, okay, cool. Okay, I made it, guys. Yay! you get one stamp on your bingo card, not two. But these guys make a lot of sense for Dark Angels, because you don't intend them to move it.
Blood Angels.
Well, you make the case of Blood Angels next.
No, I can't. No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to say it since we're saying our chapters.
These guys make a lot of sense for Dark Angels. I mean, standing still on an objective, which is what they want to do because they've all got heavy weapons, and then you're hitting on twos, makes all the sense in the world, right?
But again, I kind of think that you're taking away points from Terminators at that point. Like,
it's true.
Don't you need all the points you can for your Raven Wing and your Death Wing? And I think that these are in a Dark Angels army, likely a distraction.
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of conjecture about where Green Wing sits right now. Like, what does a Green Wing list look like? I think this could be it, though. I think you can make a very strong Primaris or Gravis heavy Green Wing list that isn't kind of centralized around any of the Death Wing or Raven Wing elements. It's kind of more centralized around things like Plasma Inceptors, things like Eradicators, things like Transports, like Blade Guard and Inceptors. So Blade Guard Impulses, rather. And yeah, I think this is a good case for building the core around Plasma Inceptors and Heavy Intercessors. I think there could be something to that.
I think you have the strats and like stability of some of the characters that you can fold into that. And when it's psychic powers, yeah, I think you can make it work. But I think that this is way more suited to something like an Ultramarines or an Imperial Fist.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, getting exploding, like very, very high quality shots and only a very limited amount. So making them explode is just like doubling down on the efficiency. I actually like that idea, especially for fists.
Yeah. And then also being able to fall back with them, because I think they've got enough, wounds on them. They got a large enough booty to where they could stand to fall back and then shoot with their quality weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Because if you move, you're already hitting on fours, and the minus one that you're going to take for moving and falling back and shooting for Ultramarines is still just going to be hitting on fours. So yeah, it's a good call, I think.
I think if you're playing either one of those chapters, then there should be high on your list, I think, to work in. It's like, what else, in your troop slot, what else are you taking that does what these guys can do?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. I think that's the thing you want to focus in on. There isn't Space Marines we used to love tactical squads. Yeah, I used to love tactical squads. I used to love a 10-man with a heavy and a special, and then a combi on the Sarge, and you break out into combat squads. But that is a bygone era at this stage. That is back in the old days. But yeah, these guys bring a little bit of that back, like the long range fire support. Like, remember, I would, I don't know about you, Paul or Tanya, but I would regularly be taking three or four tactical squads with a las cannon.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's how many can you get? Like, and then back when it used to be 5-man last plas squads.
Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, I only ever played Space Marines in 7th, and only for like a really, really small amount of time. And I played Space Wolves, so I just played Blood Claws everywhere.
Your only last cannons would, if you even had them, would be in a long fang.
Long fangs, yeah.
Oh, Adam, that was a good call on the Imperial Fist, is that, each time a model with this tactic makes an attack with a bolt weapon, as described on page 195, and we can make sure that their stuff does, an unmodified hit roll of 6 scores 1 additional hit.
Yeah, and in addition to that, they're also getting Ignore's Cover, which is pretty potent these days. And there's a lot of ways in which Ultramarines get some bonuses for sitting still. I can't remember they've got something that turns a captain, you give a captain a relic and it makes him a lieutenant as well. And then they can also give out cover or something if they stand still. So all of a sudden you could have these guys out in the open, ignoring cover, having cover with all the Unitas rerolls to hit into wound and all those things.
So to take advantage of like the exploding sixes, would you take the 2-shot bolter option?
Yeah, I like that.
So which one's that? That's the...
The Executor Heavy Bolter.
Yeah, so you can take one of those per 5, can't you?
All the models in the unit can have their heavy bolt rifles replaced with one Executor bolt rifle each.
Executor bolt rifle.
Oh, yes, that's the heavy... No, not the heavy bolter. Yes, yeah, you're right. One of the heavy bolt rifle.
So there's the Hellstorm bolt rifle, which is the Assault 3 at 30 inches. Like, Assault 3 at 30 inches is pretty good range, really. I suppose maybe you want to mix these up. Maybe you want a unit or two of 5-mans with the Assault ones, and they're going to be sitting in the mid-boards with maybe some countercharge behind them, maybe some aggressors, some smashing characters or chaplains or whatnot. And then you have your, full range fire support sitting with the executioner heavy bolters for the heavy 2 minus 2 3 damage. Oh. Man, heavy 2 minus 2 3 damage, Like, that's a very nice profile at the moment.
Yeah, but I mean, that's going to be on one person. I think that's pretty good. The heavy bolt rifle, the one that comes, the stock standard one, is rapid fire one. So I guess you can technically get an extra shot out of that. It has a 36-inch range.
Man, I'm coming around to them. Coming around to them, guys. I thought they were a bit of an awkward unit when I first looked at them. I'm like, I don't know why I'm ever going to take these guys. What does a unit of five of these guys set you back? What's 5 times 28?
It's like 1,000 points. Well, we'll talk about that in just one second. So these do all qualify under the bolt weapon rule. Basically, the rule on page 195 says that anything that has bolt in it counts, plus all these special name things.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I guess that's what it is. If you're playing a chapter that can take advantage of their shooting, then what is it? 28 times 5 is 140 points, 150 points with a special weapon,
mm-hmm.
with the upgraded weapon, which I think you do. Why not?
I mean, that's not outside the realms of possibility. A lot of people are paying, you know, 120 points for a unit of infiltrators at the moment. It's 30 more points gets you a lot more beefcake, a lot more killing power.
Extra toughness and extra wounds. So, I mean, with the what are you paying? 40 extra points, 50 extra points than you would for an intercessor squad, roughly about.
Yeah,
But you're getting the equivalent of, I'm another Marine and a half. So are you really paying extra points?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, like you said before, if you can leverage what they bring, I don't think you are. I think you're just getting some nice value that not really anyone else. I mean, maybe Necron Immortals are like for like with these guys now because they've got toughness 5 and whatnot, but they're kind of a very unique OBSEC unit. Well, you know, that comes with OBSEC. But they also get access to this, unyielding in the face of the foe is a 1 CP stratagem. Use a stratagem in any phase when a Mark 10 Gravis unit from your army is selected to the target of an attack. Until the end of that phase, each time a damage characteristic of 1 is allocated to the model in that unit, add 1 to the armor saving rolls against that attack. So anytime people are trying to shoot things like assault cannons or other bolters into you, for 1 CP, you just get plus 1 to save. And if you're in cover, that puts you to a 1-up armor save. Really very, very hard to get through easily.
Yeah, especially with the T5. I mean, T5 doesn't play all the time, but I guess the reason I went to it just then is because I don't actually think you're paying points for that T5. Fair. I think that's a value thing on this.
Well, you think about what you're getting for the 8 points over the intercessor, like we were saying before. Better gun, better toughness, another wound. Already, that's like a fairly good, you know, fairly good array of points. And on top of that, you're also getting access to some pretty clutch stratagems.
Plus, I mean, I know no one's going to forget transhuman physiology, but if you're looking to make these guys durable, let's say you invested the 300 points into making them a 10-man unit.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you invest a 1 CP in them to basically making them immortal?
Well, it'd be 2 CP if they're 10
guys. Oh, sure,
yeah,
sure,
but,
yeah.
But apart from that, you'd be like, okay, here's my 2 CP I set aside in case you guys, you know, you try and lay some hammer on me.
Is that the max size? Is 10 men?
Yeah, per squad. Yeah.
Okay. I was just thinking like while we stand, we fight material there with.
That's a very good call, Tanya. Jeez.
Yuck. Yuck. How many points is 10?
About 300.
300?
You take two specials and they're 28 each. So yeah, about 300 points. So yeah, you know, you could take, I wouldn't suggest maybe you taking 30 of these guys. That's half your army for 10 guys, for 30 dudes. But
Think about Gilliman, an ancient with the banner.
Yeah. Well, I think you link these guys up with a fatter unit of Terminators for the other while we stand. Combat scored them all at the start of the game. Man, that's just some comfortable points in the bank at that stage.
Yeah, and I think that, so again, the chapters that we play, Space Wolves, Dark Angels and Blood Angels, I don't think you're going to be the beneficiaries of these, but you know, now that they're getting people in people's hands, if you're playing any of these chapters that kind of excel at moving and shooting or falling back and shooting or get extra shots on or benefits from having a bolter in their hand, go for it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you I'm going to be getting some for Dark Angels at some point. They are like the prime candidate for just sitting still and hitting on twos and then also being coupled with Azrael, so they have a 4+ invulnerable save. And it's a bit yuck at that stage.
Well, how do you think these fit into Death Watch?
I think this is the missing piece for Death Watch. I think Death Watch is being semi-held back by the fact that they didn't have access to these, or a lot of players out there didn't have ready access, because there's a whole kill team. So they got given 3 new kill teams to play with, one of them being a combination of all the Phobos units, one being a combination of all the non-grab Gravis units, e.g. your Outriders, your Intercessors, etc., and one being the culmination of all the Gravis stuff. And that Gravis one is the one that does all the damage. That's the one that does all the heavy lifting. All the other ones exist and do some jank and jump around and get in your face and be annoying, but they don't lay the smackdown. This is the core of the unit that lays the smackdown, because you take five of these guys and five Eradicators, five of these guys, five Plasma Inceptors, and all of a sudden you can combat squad them, keep them the same. And those very high value, high damage output units like Eradicators, like Inceptors, which in a lot of cases are you one use only, because as soon as you bring them in for outflank or D-strike, your opponent's like, oh, wow, I cannot let those guys shoot twice. Da-da-da-da-da, problem solved. These guys have five Gravis armored heavy Intercessors body blocking for them, and it becomes so much better than the sum total. Yeah, I really think this unit getting released is going to possibly bring Deathwatch back into the fold, because they have been a little maligned. They haven't made the impact that I think a lot of people expected them to make. Mind you, I've been of the opinion that they're going to be a sleeper for quite a while,
yeah,
because so much of their codex is built around, you know, countering Xenos armies, and apart from Necrons and Harlequins, depending on where you live, there's not really many other Xenos players around. Like, most people are playing Space Marines at the moment, because the Geten's good.
Story.
The Geten's real good.
Very true. A cool kit. I mean, they look cool, so people are going to want to get them and put them in their collection, regardless of what chapter you play. I just think that there would be some chapters that can really make some use out of these. And if you're not taking them and you meet that criteria, then you kind of, I think you really need to question what you're spending your points on.
So you're talking about the fact that they've been released in the Kill Team box, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Are they push fit or are they multi-part?
Multi-part. Well, but I guess as much as they can be, because you do get the options for the different weapons to equip them with.
Yeah. So maybe it's the same stance, but it's just a different push fit option, like it is with the regular.
Well, I think we'll see it with how the Outrider kit was, kind of thing. It's just that's the way that you can build them. But yeah, you can build them with different options. But yeah, they're multi-part as far as like you get to pick which weapon you use. They have to glue in their hands and stuff. Yeah, you do got to build these guys.
How much is the box?
The Prynexus box, $160.
Doesn't seem crazy bad value.
Well, so you get two characters,
mm-hmm.
Space Marine. You get the flayed ones, and you get the heavy Intercessors, and then you get all of the game pieces for Prynexus.
Yeah, the how do the flayed ones look?
Oh, they look good. I mean, like kit wise, no, they look fine.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they're plastic models, which is, I think, way better than they've been in the past, for sure.
Mm.
I mean, I'm a fan of the aesthetic of flayed ones, but I think that you struggle to kind of get them in games of 40K with everything else the Necrons have going on right now.
That's actually my thoughts as well. They had a little bit of a time when there was a couple of players I pay attention to were making good use out of them, but then they kind of fell off. People were just like, oh, well, the fact that I can just make warriors actually kill so much as Novok and things, that it just didn't seem the point.
Well, I mean, you know, I like packing in disruption in list. And so if you are concerned about that and you happen to have flayed ones on your shelf, then maybe use them. I just think I think the Necrons just have so much going for them right now that the flayed ones as a unit are going to get a little overshadowed.
How many wounds is a flayed one?
One wound.
Oh, I feel like they should at least be two.
Well, they're just a Necron Warrior, aren't they? They're just a kind of gone off the deep end Necron Warrior.
Yes.
But they can't shoot.
No.
Yeah.
They have flayed claws.
How many attacks do they have?
You're asking all the hard questions.
That's why I'm here.
Three.
As strength what?
Four.
Yeah, that's a Necron Warrior can have three strength four minus one attacks as well, and that's where it gets a bit where it gets a bit hard to swallow. But look, I don't care. I think flayed ones are cool. I actually love the fluff of flayed ones is amazing.
Yeah,
there's a lot to relate to in an interesting way. There's a lot to relate to. I think everyone.
Well, let me get the full like breadth of what the deflated ones can do. So they do have three attacks, -1 AP, 1 damage, but they also have flesh hunger. Each time a model in this unit makes a melee attack against an enemy non-vehicle unit, an unmodified roll of a 6 scores one additional hit. While an enemy unit is within 3 inches of the unit, subtract 2 from the leadership characteristic of that unit. That does play every now and then. especially when, like, this is one of the, like, I don't think you're paying a lot of points for that ability. Like, the Nekwan Flayed one is only 13 points apiece. So you're getting stuff and stats, and don't forget the dynasty abilities and that kind of things, for basically no points.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, they're not bad value for what they do.
And they just got it. They've got the deployment tricks. So that's what I'm talking about. A slight bit of disruption with the leadership and then the deployment tricks.
You don't want to hear why I think Flayed ones are relatable.
Well, now you've piqued my interest.
It's gonna be an interesting tangent. I was like, maybe leave it at it. Maybe don't say that again. They're like, nah, they need to know. Everyone has had I don't know if everyone has, but I can tell you, I've had periods in my life where I've just felt like, you know, kind of throwing in the towel, becoming a recluse and, you know, becoming a cat man, you know, bunch of cats, or in my case, probably dogs. I feel like Flayed Ones is the closest the 41st millennium has to that. They're like, I've had enough of being metal. I'm becoming human now, and I'm going to decide my own fate in this crazy world. And they're just like, nah, don't care what you say, man. They're like, but you're metal, Simon. No, I'm not. But you are. No, don't care.
Yeah, I'm just gonna wear this skin suit and things are gonna be fine. Everything is fine. Don't I look fine?
Yeah, it's fine, man. Look, I'm pretty. Leave me alone.
Yeah, so Flayed Ones are compelled by a sanity twisting curse to wear the bloody skins of their victims, as well as their minds. It warps their bodies and causes long flare claws to form, in which they carve open anything that lives. Very similar to the Flesh Eater courts, like in mind space.
Mm. So you obviously want to have these guys over for dinner for Sunday roast. Who's going to carve it better, you know?
Hey, look, it's right there in the description.
That's right, yeah.
Carve open anything that lives.
I mean, a roast was living roast at some point.
It was at one point. Now, so, but I guess, you know, back to slightly on topic is that, as much as we get anyway. but again, like, I think that the Necrons, like, when you're building your list, like, I don't know what takes advantage of this, unless you're building a full close combat-centered Necron list, which is possible.
I will tell you, it is terrifyingly possible. So I played, I went to a tournament on the weekend and I played a quite a good Necron player, and I was playing a pretty uninspiring but very reliable and very powerful Dark Angels army. No one before this game, no one had ever killed more than seven of my Terminators in one turn. No one. And that was only the one guy who did it through, you know, use of three units of retributors, of full multi-melter retributors. And they killed seven. This guy in one turn killed 13 with melee Necrons. And I went, holy
really?
My
was
god.
Was using a Lich Guard? Like, what is, like...
So 10 Scythe Guard, 10 Novox Scythe Guard. So coming in with, I think it's 50 or 60 attacks hitting on twos.
Yep.
Like... Yeah, and then just a unit of Necron Warriors with a character and the papa, the big old daddy Nightbringer, and he's a beast. Mm-hmm. He's an absolute beast. He did 9 mortal wounds, just like straight up. Oh, hi there, 9 mortal wounds with his Catan powers, and I went, yikes, that sucks. Yeah. And he charged in. He only killed 2 more, but the fact that that's...
Only that's 2 like more, half, so he's yeah. killed 7 he's by killed himself.
He's killed 5 by okay. himself, yeah. Like, what the... This one guy. Like, whole armies can't kill 5 of these in a turn. And he's killed 5. And then the Lich Guard killed 6 of another squad, and then the Warriors killed the others. Like, this, a full unit of Warriors picked up 2 more, I believe. That might have been with shooting, though. But yeah, man, like, melee Krons, oof. Oof, oof, oof. They can do the work. They can do the biz.
Yeah, so the Flayed Ones are elite choices, which, again, I think that's competing with certain things. But a unit of 5 is only 65 points.
Yeah, they're actually really good at getting your scramblers and stuff. I think there's a lot of people are getting better at denying scramblers from their opponent. I know it's something that I'm starting to try and play into to deny. Like, I don't pick it anymore, but when people try and pick it, I try and stop them getting it. And that's because it becomes predictable when your opponent takes it and they've got things like a couple of crypto thralls in strategic reserve. So you know they have to walk in from a table edge. So you screen your table edges for the first 3 turns and then they have to come in front of you. You pick them up before they get to do the scramblers. But when you have innate deep strike, which is what they have, yeah?
Yeah, they do. Yep.
They come up 9 inches away. It's a lot harder to just, you know, put a couple of guys here, there within table edge distance and turn it all off.
Yeah, the actual wording is their dimensional translocation during deployment. You can set up this unit in a hyperspace dimension instead of setting it up on the battlefield. If you do, then the reinforcement step of one of your movement phases, you can set up this unit anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from enemy models.
Nice.
Yeah. So again, with reanimation protocols, the leadership debuff, the extra exploding hits, the multitude of attacks, neg 1 AP, 13 points.
Oh, you want to talk about a little combo? So there's a lot of different Catan powers, and naturally some are better than others. But one of the Catans I'm not seeing thrown out much is the Deceiver. A lot of people seem to be gravitating towards Void Dragon and Nightbringer. Nightbringer because he's a beast, Void Dragon because the model is jaw-droppingly ridiculously gorgeous.
It's so gigantic. It's a
yeah. And but the Deceiver, he has a cosmic power where it's leadership, and he rolls 3d6, and for every point I believe he's over your leadership, you take a mortal. And so a -2 leadership aura makes that a lot more potent, like taking people from leadership or, you know, 7 to 5 or from 8 to 6 and then rolling 3d6, you can just be like, ah, here's 8 mortal wounds from this one spell I just did, man. That's amazing. Magnus doesn't do that sometimes.
Oh, that's yeah. I can see some power in that.
Mm. Yeah, I like it.
What,
I
think, eight mortal wounds. I mean, that could wipe a squad.
Well, between that and the guy, you know, charging, following up with the charge, it's, yeah, you got pretty good odds of killing whatever you're into.
Unless they have, like, some kind of leadership ignore or buff on their side, then that's going to make it incredibly hard to stay on the table. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, bonus. That's some bonus synergy, like you're just describing. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, you could just take these two units, and they're just fine, irrespective of each other. But then when you need them, chuck them together, add a little bit of extra on top, a little bit of a cherry.
So I don't know if I'm talking us into taking flayed ones, but I mean, they are 65 points for a squad of 5.
Yeah, they are quite reasonably costed, which is, I suppose, best in going in their favor. They bring they bring all the Necron shenanigans with them.
Yeah, I like it. So with the Pry Nexus, the kill team game, I actually quite enjoy these skirmish level games. And then this one is set up very similar to how Arena was before, if you guys remember that, to where you're playing on more of a two-dimensional space. I mean, you're playing with three-dimensional, like, objectives and the board design, that, you know, it all goes on the board that comes with it, and the pieces are creating like walls and caverns and points of interest on the table, but you're playing in that two-dimensional space and not three-dimensional, like going up levels of buildings and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
So very organized play event, I think, friendly or travel friendly. Like if you go to your buddy's house and you can just take your one box instead of, you're like a box of figures instead of, you know, boxes and boxes of terrain.
It's also really accessible to new players too, right? Because you've just taken out like one set of rules that will like overcomplicate it, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, fair point. I think the box is cool. It's a bit on the pricey side, and I think that individually the units themselves, I think people can make a case for, you know, how it stacks up to get against other box sets at a similar price point. But I think that they're kind of undervaluing the experience of what this actually is, which, like you guys just mentioned, it's a two-player experience that is easy to jump into, put down and pick up if you wanted to.
Yeah, I suppose that's the big strength. I mean, how long does it take to play a kill team game?
30 minutes. I mean, if people know what they're doing, it's 30, 40 minutes at the most.
That's awesome. I think it's just awesome to have that in the sphere, in the community. You know, I've always thought of Kill Team as like the best entry level game that they had available for a long time. Especially when they split off Necromunda into its own thing. You know, it really, really took on a life of its own as it had before. But man, G-Dub models, so good.
Well, so with Kill Team, it's like, you know, pre-COVID, of course, you know, you could have a tournament in the span of 3 or 4 hours in an evening. If you wanted to, it wasn't a whole day event that you could do other things and still be playing with your favorite figures. You know, I used it as an excuse originally to paint up a Death Guard kill team with all the gorgeous models that I wanted to play with. Sometimes I'll have a buddy, you know, we'll be playing and like, well, we don't know exactly what we want to play, or, you know, I'm tired. He's tired of running up against my list, or I'm tired of running up against his list. Okay, well, cool. We're our same 4 hours that we were going to play one game of 40K in, and we could play 5 games of Kill Team potentially.
Do you know what I really like Kill Team for? It is for new players. Like, Kill Team as a game is very, I think, tactically robust. But I think Kill Team is really good for players who aren't sure what their play style is and don't want to invest a lot of money into buying an entire army just to find out, I don't like the way it plays. With Kill Team, you can buy one box of troops, you can make a kill team, and you can see how the faction plays.
And use all the strategies and stuff. Like, you actually, there's things you could do to get you that full on aroma of the army.
Exactly. Like, so for me, I always thought Dark Eldar was super cool, but I didn't know if I wanted to paint a bunch of like spiky, tiny, fiddly little models, right? So I actually started playing them in Kill Team, and I'm fairly confident I don't want to paint them as an entire army. However, I do understand like why people really enjoy playing Dark Eldar because of all like the tricksy shenanigans, right? Like Fire and Fade, that is really fun, right? So that's what I see the value in Kill Team as, but I don't know, what do you guys think?
I completely agree with you. I mean, when you can, I do have a buddy who has basically the only way to describe it is like hobby ADD. and he's completely passionate about this one thing. And then 2 weeks later, he's passionate about something else. Well, he has a Thousand Suns kill team. He has a Grey Knights kill team. He has a Ultramarines kill team. He's got a Dark Eldar kill team. These are real examples. Like, this is what he has, because he can carry this entire collection around in one army case and break it out whatever he feels like that day.
That is very powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, I think also it lets you, I mean, you can also, I mean, you go a little bit one step beyond. Now, how cool is it to be like a hobby ambassador to where you got a new player? It is, well, hey, you know, I happen to collect all these things. Try it out. See what you like. Do you like Black Templar? Well, here's, I happen to own 11 Black Templar Marines that you can play with.
The other thing too is like you can really take, like you can paint your kill team to the best of your abilities, right? Like you really take your time on those models, make them look fantastic, and then get to play with them right away. It's, you always get to play painted with kill team because whoa.
You're assuming you're still not going to procrastinate.
I mean, come on, you can paint like 10 models. You can do that.
I'm staring down the barrel of these 15 models that I'm looking at for the last 3 weeks. But you are right. You actually, the kind of the pressure's off. You could you could put as much love into these models as you want. And the cool thing is they're going to perform heroically on the table. Like they could come into their own and all get something to do on the table.
Every single one can be a named character.
Yep. Hey, I'm with you. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that interesting thing with the Necrons we spotted. See y'all in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Hope you enjoyed that word from our sponsors. I still got Tanya and Adam.
Oh hey.
Sup?
Folks, so I have something to say here, and I do think this is kind of revolutionary for Necrons. Let me read this out. Distasteful of their proximity, a Chronomancer nevertheless relishes unleashing a feral pack of Flayed Ones upon flesh and blood raiders as she secures the transdimensional entrance to her crypt.
Yabba dabba doo. Female Necrons.
First recorded female Necron, I think, right?
Yeah, I can't honestly remember another one, another mention.
I mean, I haven't read like all the Necron stories, you know, like the stuff that like Graham and Neil did, and I'm sure there's been others. But I don't recall mention of another female Necron.
Yeah, I can't think of one.
So neat. I mean, I really like all the personality that's getting into the Necrons these days. I mean, like it's been, I know a couple of years we got the dynasties with characters and personality coming back to them. And then, you know, so it's the thing of, well, of course, you know, there is no flesh and everyone looks the same when their flesh is removed and they're all skeletons. Mm. But now we're seeing some, you know, additional, I guess, personality and things to this race, which I think is really cool.
It's going to seem like a little thing, but I actually like that they didn't like do a big announcement that it is a female model. And the reason why is because sometimes when you do that, I feel like it draws attention to the fact that there's maybe not as many female models as they should be. And it kind of shows me that they're committed to increasing representation overall, just naturally throughout the line. And I think that is the best call going forward, honestly. Also, I think it's really nice that they did it right before International Women's Day. Good on you, GW.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that Monday? So people may hear this on Saturday, and then that's on Monday?
Yes, it's on Monday.
That is March 8th?
Yes.
I think this is super cool. I mean, like, Necrontyr were essentially humans, right? They were just like...
The Necrontyr were, I mean, they were the bipedal life forms.
Yeah, yeah. They were, they weren't saying, no one said they're any like ape descents or anything, but you know, they said they were human-like, humanoid creatures. There's no reason they shouldn't be women, and there shouldn't be a representation of women, you know, equal to kind of what we have in humanity.
Well, past like hushed whispers of the fact that they existed as flesh and blood beings at one point, I don't think we know a ton about them still.
Well, yeah, it's also interesting that when they're, you know, personalities get stripped back, you know, how much of that kind of identity is lost. The fact that any of them, the fact that anything has essentially a gender within the Necron faction is interesting in and of itself.
I think that's some more Silent King shenanigans. Maybe we need to get Red back on next week and talk about what the Silent King has done. Are we going to see, you know, more of this coming? You know, factions within factions kind of thing.
I just think that it makes the faction itself a little bit more relatable, right? Like, I guess there is something kind of charming about like soulless robots, but there's something a little bit more charming about soulless robots who maybe don't think that they're soulless robots.
Well, originally they were soulless robots, and I think that kept people from, or at least some people, relating to them. And I think it was a barrier. Like, the idea of soulless robots in a movie where they are the enemy is cool.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing them, I think it's less cool.
I agree.
I agree with that as well. I mean, what tactics do they have? Why do they perform in certain ways? Why do things exist? Or why has that guy got a staff? Or why is this, you know, all these things? And you would just be able to like, I don't know, just mindless nothing.
So, yeah, well, they're obviously not Terminators, you know, like...
And yeah, and like G-Dub had, I guess, the whole hive mind concept, which would have been what you would have did with the mind. Like, there's an overarching, you know, overmind
there's some
code program
that's driving them. There's something in the background, you're like a not.
Yeah, there's
not
like an AI spirit or something,
you know.
Exactly, but that had already been done with like the hive mind for the Tyranids. So probably they needed, something like what they did. I think the war in heaven, you know, the Catan and the Necrons versus essentially the Eldari
epic
orcs. In you know, italics, the old ones is a fantastic story, and I would love to see that. Maybe not told in the same depth like the Horus Heresy, but I'd love to see like a line of novels following a couple of stories through that. I'd like to see it told from the Necrontyr point of view, which essentially is the kind of the bad guys in that.
Ooh, or somebody like a John Grammaticus or whatever that teleports back into that time and exists there for a book or two.
Or even just give us a story of like the Silent Kings. Give us Cesarican's actual story, because he became the Silent King. I don't believe he was the Silent King during when the War in Heaven started, because it was just kind of a timeless thing that went on forever. I'd love to see hear the story of him taking over the reins of the Necrontyr into like essentially a losing war. They were losing the war before they allied with the Catan, and then the Catan kind of evened the scales a bit. I was also, I'd probably leave this one for Red, but I'd love to have a little discussion with you guys on the nature of the Catan, how they existed, what are they, where'd they come from? Because it's kind of not explained apart from they're kind of made up of the natural stuff of the universe.
Yeah, I see that them being like the ultimate physical thing, because, you know, they don't use warp. And so they are where the old ones, I guess, were manifestation of the warp, and the old ones, I don't know if they used the warp, they came from the warp, they were the warp kind of thing. Where do they go? Do they go to the next universe over? Like this, all those are, these are,
and I'd love to know.
They obviously go to the Q continuum.
you could be right.
Yeah.
I'd love to know in what order like kind of the mythological beings of the 41st millennium came to be. Like, when was the first star god born? When was the first old one? When was Khorne was the first born chaos god? Where does he come into it? Or where does when was he born? Was it during the War of Heaven?
Oh, in relation to this stuff?
I'd love a full 41st millennium. Well, the tale of Warhammer 40K, like in chronological order, like what came first?
Yeah, like, I think we know that the chaos gods were born out of emotion of mortal beings, or at least manifested, not born. Maybe manifest is probably a better word, manifested out of mortal ambitions and emotions. But which mortals and when did it first take shape?
Yeah. Was it Necrontyr? Was it humanity itself? You know, what was it? It actually would be awesome. Like, cause there's the,
did the old ones try to wake them up to fight the Satan?
Yeah. Or was it because they birthed things like the Eldari that enabled, you know, a clear conscious emotional thing during like the upheaval of the war on heaven that, like all these emotions were spawned and therefore, and you know, all this awful turmoil and therefore, you know, birthed the chaos gods by extension. And then the Eldari went on to, you know, birth Slaanesh in addition. Yeah, but that's, I find that stuff really, really interesting, and I don't have many answers and I love that I don't.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. Like, you know, we talk about the all this is birthed from just a few pages somewhere and
yeah,
but it's so captivating. And that's one of the joys of this universe and this story. I mean, the 40K story.
Yeah, for sure. The Orcs one, the Brain Boys, is so cool.
just spend a lot of time going back between Warhammer Fantasy books and Warhammer 40K books and then like connecting the dots. Now, there's been a concerted effort to remove those connections. They don't, I'm using air quotes, quote unquote, exist anymore. But it used to be just a joy to find those little nuggets of things. And that's when it was such a joy to find the nugget in, you know, when they did the end times, you know, with the Skaven basically seeing into 40K and stuff. It was,
yeah, that was pretty funny.
I was like, oh, it's happening again, you know, but then it all went away.
I remember back then, like everybody's like, oh, hopefully we find like Khaldor Drago that makes a crossover into like the fantasy realms or whatever. It's like, it's just not going to happen. It would be epic though.
Well, I mean, Sigmar is clearly the eighth Primarch.
Well, yeah, clearly he's one of the lost Primarchs, of course. It's written, it's canon, it's known.
It is. It's the second and the eighth. Is that? No, it's, is it the second? Oh. What's that?
No, I'm tripping. I have no idea. I shouldn't say anything.
I can't remember which of the two missing. I only know about the Ninth Legion and the rest of them just don't matter.
Yeah, I don't know about the first because it's the first and I stopped paying attention.
I'm sure by now we've been corrected. It's fine.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. There'll be a comment. Or five.
But the, so, you know, the Necrons, again, I think that getting us back to where we started with is that I think that what they were was enough, like, to get them in the door of the 40K universe. But, you know, as, like, that was, like, the lore has expanded 100-fold since they were, first came in from the White Dwarf pages or whenever they did.
I think the right word is matured. Everything, it's matured. And I suppose as things mature, you want them to be relatable. You want people to grow with them. And really what they did with Necrons, it's, but man, the more I think about like a story based on like the Necrontyr and telling their story as essentially a doomed race, the more I think about it, the more I would find that really, really interesting.
No, I mean, us diehards, I guess us longtime folks that, you know, everyone likes change, but no one likes to be changed. That's something we say on the show a lot. It took us a lot to accept the new lore. And I wasn't sure like how the Necrons were going to, like, look, there's, everyone knows that I still struggle with the fact that there's Necrons that have anything to do with the Blood Angels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was also a critical thing that helped work them back into the story and the narrative and basically a jumping off point for where we are today. And I think where the Necrons are today is, I mean, pretty freaking amazing. Compared to where they came from.
Yeah, compared to where they were two years ago, they're in a phenomenally exciting place. Fluff progression, model range progression, rules progression, lore progression. It's all there.
Yeah, I think that someone coming into the game today is never going to know that they only had 11 models to choose from when they first hit
the scene. The only request I have, I want pariahs. Everyone's pariahs. You want pariahs. I want pariahs. J-Dub, give us pariahs.
So, okay, let's theory craft for a second. Why do you think we don't have pariahs?
Probably because we've got Lich Guard. They probably just superseded that. And also possibly it's quite a hard rule to balance.
That's what I think it is. Because I think you could have easily made a variant of the Lich Guard just be, this is the new pariahs, and they get the pariah ability. But I think that it's a difficult rule to really, anything that that is like that's that Calexis Assassin Sister of Silence type ability that you could work into a real functional army without a downside. You know, you're not violating a faction thing. You're not. You don't have a weak outer shell just to get that effect or something, and you could have it all the way across the board. I think it's a little withering, little bit of a fun sponge.
That would be another assumption you could make. Like, is it just because they would be too good, or they'd have to be so prohibitively expensive for how good they are that no one would want to play them anyway?
If we go even further, I mean, past that, because you can find a way to balance. I guess you could find a way to balance a rule. But does it mix in with what the Necrons need? Does it fill their niche in the like puzzle that is all the various different armies?
Well, probably not now. Now they're probably in just such a good place holistically that it's not going to add that much. But in years gone by, like I'd say pretty much all of 7th edition up until they got the Decurion, and then they were fine. And then all of 8th edition, literally the whole thing.
Hey, you've got your little tomb spiders with the psychic like prod or whatever
one
it is.
One single deny, yeah. It's a gloom prison.
That's it.
I have a question for you guys. So as people who play the game, we often look at the models that we can buy for our faction from that perspective, right? And then we look at their rules and think about how they're balanced, and that's fine, right? So maybe in terms of the rules, these models shouldn't exist because it might be overbearing or whatever. But from like a collector's point of view, shouldn't we have the model? Like, okay, if the model is too heavily points costed that you're not going to field it on the table, is that in itself enough for that model to not exist? Or are we totally disregarding the experience of people who just collect the faction?
No, I agree with you on that. But I think this is a case of just the model range, the lore range, like everything, to use Adam's term from before, the Necrons matured past the point of needing that effect in their list. And so I would assume that's why it's not there. That's it. I mean, because you can still get that aesthetic from the Lich Guard. I mean, there are polar molding Necrons now that you can do whatever you want with. Like, if that's what you want. If you are an old hammer collector, you could probably still find a squad out there.
But if you're coming into it and you're new and maybe you are interested
it doesn't. Yeah, I don't think those people, they're gonna be like, "What? Why do I need that? I'm just gonna chop you up with my glowy halberds."
Well, unless they just collect stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But then it becomes a chase thing. But that's part of the hobby. That's one of the parts of the hobby that I think that once you really get the bug, that's what you do. Like you go. Like I have an original metal set of Legion of the Damned for no reason.
Other than awesome.
Yeah, no, they are awesome. They got, I thought, oh man, I'm going to use these metal shoulder pads. They have flamey skulls and stuff on them. I think there's a place for that.
Yeah. I didn't have any opinion or anything going in. I was just wondering what you guys thought.
Yeah. I think that if you have that desire within you, you're going to get the models, or you're going to,
as soon as you find out about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you're going to build a vanity unit. Like, that's what I call it. It's like, I just want this to exist. I have to bring it into being. And so you find a way through various kit bashing or trolling eBay every 2 hours or whatever.
What's your vanity unit then?
Mine was Blood Angel Stern Guard.
Okay.
I believe I've used him once on the table.
What's your vanity unit?
I don't know if I have one. How would you describe a vanity unit? Like, what makes it a vanity unit?
I think something that doesn't really have a core place. It doesn't have the efficiency that you would normally work into an army list. You just like the look of it so much that you are compelled, or like the idea of it so much that you're compelled to go out, acquire the models or the bits, assemble them, paint them to maybe a higher standard than you've painted other figures in the past. Maybe even to take your painting threshold from, you know, wherever you've plateaued recently to something a little bit better, and then to put it on the shelf and be cool with it if it just lived there forever.
I guess I do have a vanity unit. It's like a counts as Gaz. It's a third party counts as Gazgul. I'm not like a huge fan of Gaz just because it doesn't play the way that I want to play. So, but I painted it really good. It's probably my best performing post on Instagram ever. So yeah. And he looks really good. I like to show him off.
That counts.
Yeah.
Really?
Adam, you got one?
I have several. 6 of them right now. Baneblades.
Nice.
Yeah. A bunch of Baneblades. All the useless variants of Baneblades. I don't have any Shadow Swords. You know, remember when Shadow Swords were good? None of those. all the other ones. Yeah.
Nice. You can make a case for some of those with the high transport capacity. Like, I like the Stormlord?
Stormlord. Yeah, that's been my favorite and my best performing one of them. Oh, that the Stormhammer had a day, had a little day in the sun.
Do you ever put Bulgrins inside?
Yes.
It seems so ridiculously fun.
It's good.
I mean, it's basically how I'm going to be playing orcs, though, right? Is like kill tanks with Meganobs inside.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
We should play that game.
Roll it off, see what's better.
Yeah. Let's just roll into each other. Meganobs beat.
Yes.
right now, Bulgrins will get smashed by Meganobs. But yeah.
Most things get smashed by Meganobs, though.
I'm doing the dual kill saw thing.
Then I'll get very smashed.
Be double smashed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's cool. That's what I think. But I think that, you know, you do this and hopefully you have the luxury of having that hobby time to where you can work in a unit just for yourself every now and then.
Mm, just for the joy of it, just for the joy of having it painted. And then back to where we started, that, you know, female Necrons, more diversity and they managed to do it quietly, respectfully, in a way, like in a faction where you probably wouldn't have seen it or expected it.
Well, this model is also, I mean, this is something people are going to like. This is one, some people are going to want this in their collection because of the uniqueness of the model itself, like with these floating cubes and the staff with the orb on it.
Mm. Yeah. It's a cool model. It's a really cool model.
For any of the ladies out there who are listening, we can all just rejoice in the fact that this model does not have boob armor.
Yay.
Thank you, GW. Thank you.
I'm digging all the tentacles, though.
And yeah, tentacles. Yeah. So.
Well, these mechanical tendrils and things like that. This is what I'm talking about. The uniqueness of the model is that it's not walking on legs. It is scuttling in a very almost like menacing way. But the model has grace and this kind of gravity. Like you can look at it and say, okay, that's a leader. That's an HQ. That's something that model is powerful or cool.
I feel like a lot of the new models in the Necron range. So if you go back and you look at old Necron codices, I know I'm new to the game. Don't ask me why I'm looking at like really old Necron codices. But if you go back and you read those, they have like a very Lovecraftian feel to the language that they use to describe them. And, you know, even like the fact like the old ones exist and all that. And I feel like with the new models, they took that idea around the lore and the language of like old Necrons, and they actually put it physically into the models, which I think is actually really smart and really cool and makes them a lot more compelling as a faction than they were before, because I feel like before the lore didn't match what they actually looked like, if that makes any sense.
I can see that.
Right? Like, what is more Lovecraftian than tentacles?
Yeah, look, yes.
Yeah, literally bottom of the sea.
Well, I mean, they actually help in combat too. So, you know, she starts out with one attack, but the chrono tendrils, each time the bearer fights, it makes three additional attacks with this weapon. So, I mean, you're not getting a lot of melee power out of it, but you're getting something.
Yeah, look, I think if you're expecting any of the Cryptek models to do heavy lifting for you outside of, you know, like an Entropic Lance, you're barking up the wrong tree. But they all bring some pretty spicy goodness to the table. I've been looking at the, actually all of them, the Plasmancers, the Psychomancers, the Chronomancers. Which one's this one?
This is the Chronomancer.
Yeah, they're all spicy. I think G-Dub's done a great job of breaking these things up and giving them a bit of interest. I mean, the first one they did was they had the Cryptek with the Chronometron, and then the Cryptek with the capey thing. That's what it's called in the codex.
Totally the capey thing. The Veil of Darkness?
No, it was the one that gave it like movement 10 or movement 12, so it could keep up and give the better res to the Canoptic units and stuff, and like yep. Praetorians. I can't remember what it's called.
The capey thing.
Yeah, the capey thing. It was the magic carpet. It was the metal magic carpet. And he's just like, I could show you the welding around the table.
I want to play that. That sounds really fun.
Oh, but you can.
Somebody model that up. Somebody model that up.
You just had to plug into the app the capey thing.
It's my new vanity model.
I take it back because you know what it actually is? The Silver Surfer. That's the pun of the day. I'm out, guys.
That's a better. That's a better.
Doesn't
word.
Get yeah. any better than yeah. that.
No, that was the top. That was the peak.
My goodness. Well, look, this is if you're the flayed ones. I think people are going to find a struggle to make a home for them. But I can definitely see a use depending on what you want to do for all those cryptek like support characters.
Mm.
And who doesn't like adding cool HQ and elite units to your collection?
Yeah, how can you not enjoy that? It's brilliant.
It is neat. The Necron players. I think we know that they are pleased with the sheer volume. And we talked about it a lot in shows past about just the volume of models that have been added to their range. And I guess if we take out the replication of the 60 warrior list that we saw in the open, like I've seen that yep. come up a couple times. I haven't seen two copycat Necron lists other than that one out there. There's a lot yeah. of a variety that people can make.
Absolutely. And I love that we're seeing more and more Catan builds start to come out as I suppose the more competitive meta starts swinging towards things that are ultra durable. Of course, mortal wounds are the best, you know, equalizer that you have available. And people are just starting to pivot to them in droves, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah. So the Chronomaster has the Time Splinter Mantle. I don't know if that's what you're talking about. No, you weren't, because it didn't move. It's a 4+ invulnerable save. And the Chronometron, in your command phase, you can select one friendly dynasty unit within 9 inches of this model until the start of your next command phase. You can reroll charge rolls made for that unit, and models in that unit have a 5+ invulnerable save.
Yes, sick. I mean, that 5+ invuln save on things on, you know, a big block of 20 warriors or, God forbid, 9 scarabs. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. She's only 80 points.
Good price. Yeah. Good price. I'm down. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. 4-wound character. You can give it the Entropic Lance, which is an assault 1, strength 8, neg 3, D3 plus 3 damage weapon.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. Nice little pinch hitter.
Yeah. I think that's it. You kind of have this model kind of just moving around, doing what they do in the back. They have, a couple of crypto thralls performing actions. If anything is close, you yep. zot it with this thing.
Yeah, I like them. I like them a lot. I think the cryptex add a lot of flavor, add a lot of spice, especially in the model range as well. A lot of the Necron warrior, sorry, the Necron character range is getting a little aged. Like you've got the good old Destroyer Lord upgrade kit and the Necron Lord with the Resurrection Lord, even the very old cryptex. And some of the characters, like, they still hold up. I still think, like, Vargard Oberon looks like a badass, like, standing there just staunch with his war scythe.
Yep.
But some of them are looking a little dated. Like, yeah. I mean, Zandrek doesn't look anywhere near as cool as Oberon, but you can tell they're, like, slimmer design. Remember when the new old Overlord came out? The one that's standing, you know, poised Orb of Eternity or yeah. Resurrection Orb in one hand, a big war scythe in that one. That was kind of the middle point between the last kind of update they got and this one. And you can see the difference in the way they're pushing the sculpts.
We might be confusing people slightly with saying the Cryptek and then calling it Chronomancer. Is it the Chronomancer, the Psychomancer, the Plasmancer, the Technomancer? They all have the Cryptek keyword.
Mm.
So they are cryptics.
They're all cryptics, yeah. But I'm talking about the pre this codex. Yeah. It was only just the cryptic.
Yeah, there's a cryptic that you could kit out for a couple of different mm-hmm. functions, and now they have been split out into their own unique unit types,
flavors.
Yeah, and also coolie models. So
yeah, really cool models, man. They're probably some of the coolest character models and some of the most innovative character models that GW has ever done. Yeah. Like, what's the one that's breaking up into like cubes? The Lego guy, Psychomancer. He's like, you become Lego. That model is incredible.
Yeah, the Harbinger of Despair. In your morale phase, you can select one enemy unit within 12 inches of this model. Roll 3d6. The result is greater than enemy unit's leadership characteristic. Select one of the results to take effect until the start of your next morale phase. Each unit can only be selected for this ability once per phase. One of them is select a unit can't perform any actions.
Yeah, and loses, and that's another one loses OPSEC. It's actually really kind of cool. Nice little bit of tech piece to add in there.
Yeah, that's another great model, and you're right. So I think in the old Cryptek, as it were, as the Technomancer.
Yeah, what we traditionally think of as a Cryptek, that is what they became, yeah?
Yeah, it is.
Man, have you seen the Ophidian Destroyer models in person, guys?
I don't know if I have.
I haven't, but I'm just looking at them now, and holy crap, they still look amazing, and they evoke all my nostalgic goodness as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we kind of went off on Necrons, but they deserve it.
They do. They actually really do.
And I'm with you, man. I want to see, I want to read what it was like time in the war in heaven.
Yeah, I think it's a story they should, that GW should look into telling, whether it's too big a task to take on, because it is an insane thing to try and encapsulate in one linear story. But just, I don't know, just give us a couple of short stories from it. Like, that'd be cool. Like, what was life as a regular bog standard, like Necron Tia human, like, sorry, mortal, you know? How did they view the Triarch and the ruling parties? And
the writers don't have enough to do.
That's right. Yeah,
we don't have this boutique request from.
They've got what have they got? They've got all the new Pariah Nexus stuff to write, and all the stuff to do with the Cicatrix Maledictum, and all the stuff with Abaddon still roving and doing whatever he wants. And then they've got to finish off the Siege of Terror and go into the Scouring. And yeah, there's nowhere near enough for him to do. They're going to be done in like next week, you know.
Look, I still want it. Okay, let's theorize, or I guess wish list just a bit. If you could pick one thing for the next thing to be written about, or to get a box game about,
oof,
what would it be? Tanya, what do you have? I mean, I know I'm putting everybody on the spot.
I want more Inquisition lore. Or even Rogue Trader stuff. Like, I like the idea of these like autonomous people who sort of like work outside of the Imperium and have, you know, a lot of power to do whatever they want. What are they getting up to? I want to know more. Yeah, you know, especially Rogue Trader stuff, because they're like the only sanctioned like Imperials who can have dealings with Xenos.
Yeah, they're really the middle point between the Imperium and like all the other races of the galaxy.
Yeah, I want more of that stuff.
That's cool. A good pick.
Adam, what you got?
I want another Horus Heresy box set of the ilk of Betrayal at Kalth and Burning of Prospero. I want a Siege of Terror box set with like the notable players of the Siege of Terror. I want maybe a new Abaddon in there as like the keystone model. Like we got a new Abaddon as he was at the Siege of Terror. Or you can do with some of the other characters that were probably really notable there. Maybe you do Luther and pay some homage to Adam, a little Adam here, and you got a Luther model in there. But I want to see plastic breaches, plastic assault, like Mark 5 or Mark 2 Assault Marines, whichever, how crazy you want to go. And yeah, really mix it up. Chuck in one or two of the vehicles, or maybe a brand new dread kit. You know, because there was a lot of scrambling around to make stuff work at that point. Like Mark 6 armor, I think, had just come out, and only, I think, was it Mark 5 or Mark 6 had only just come out, and like only
come out during the Crusades, and only certain legions had much of it. And there's actually a campaign to drop in on Mars before they knew Mars was ultimately going to be taken, and get all that and scoot back out.
That's what I was mentioning. Like, there was some there, like present for the loyalists, but the traders had tons of it, because essentially all the Sons of Horus had Mark 6, had the new stuff, because you know, Horus was getting the best of it.
Yep.
But that would be a cool box set to do. Very ambitious. And I think I'd love it. Like, an Indominus scale, something of the scale of like Indominus. Make it extra big, extra grandiose, and like a box set to see off the closing of that. Essentially, they've been writing those books for 15 years or longer.
Seems about right.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have like a big commemorative thematic thing to go along with the ending of that storyline.
Like, I don't want to put a box around your wish here or anything, but I think that you might be able to accomplish that if they did it over just one of the battles, like the Battle of Spaceport Lion, or
exactly
the Fourth Wall or something like that. But I'm also, look, I'm with you as long as I get a Plastic Sanguineous, then make it happen. For me, I've just had this idea in my head for forever. I think I've talked about it before, but I'd love to see a board game of the conquest of Terra by the Emperor.
Ooh, that's cool. Oh. Like him versus him with his Thunder Warriors and some Custodes and some Space Marines versus like the Techno Barbarians.
When Space Marines, I don't think at the time, but against all the Techno Barbarians and all those things, like the, you know, mm-hmm. I want to know, you know, who almost beat the Emperor, you know, like the last war to unify the planet, that kind of thing.
That's a cool one. I like that a lot.
So you say it would be a board game. Would it be like a Risk style board game where you're just sort of like collecting territory, or like how would you do that?
You know, there's all kind of cool like modern mechanics in board games now. And I don't know if you'd be playing cooperatively or if you would play it, you know, again, I don't know. I don't even know if I'm smart enough to create this thing. I just want somebody else to do it. But it'd be, you know, it'd be neat if you, you know, if it somehow work it into like a cooperative thing where you're playing against the environment and the environment is, you know, these warlords all over the earth, and you have to unify the planet. And then over time you unlock things like, you know, first you've got the Thunder War, or first you begin with whatever the pre Thunder Warrior stuff is, and then you unlock the Thunder Wars and you unlock the Custodes.
That's cool. Yeah, that's
cool. Then if you misplay when the Custodes take out the Thunder Warriors, then, you know, again, there's all these little pitfalls for yourself.
I like it. I'd play it.
But I want to know who stood up to this. Like, we know how absolutely, you know, just powerful Thunder Warriors and Custodes are. What on planet Earth stood up against them?
Well, because I can remember reading stuff in like Master of Mankind referring to them. But I can't for the life remember like the Maharajas and like the Pharaons and the cult of XYZs and all these things. And I just listed off a bunch of lines of all these tyrannical little kingdoms and fiefdoms and stuff. And that it would be so cool to see that represented somewhere.
That's if I could just like wish that into existence and play it tomorrow, I'd love to. Oh, well, good. Well, thanks for joining us on this this flight of fancy and talking about the cool things. Look, I think Prior Nexus is for big 40K players, I don't know that it's that you necessarily want to switch to smaller scale. But, you know, you probably got some buddies that want to play with the figures that aren't willing to jump into the plunge of how we play 40K. But so, I mean, I will continue to talk about Kill Team. I think it's a fabulous way to enjoy the hobby for all the reasons that we described. And it's definitely worth checking out.
And it's a great reason if you are a Necron or a Space Marine player, it's a great excuse to buy the box and then use the other half that you don't want to entice somebody else to play with you.
There you go.
And, you know, start them on their hobby journey.
Pro tip.
Well, please leave us some 5-star reviews, like, share, subscribe, and all that stuff. Comments, send us some messages on Facebook or Twitter and Instagram. Love talking about stuff. If you are or Jazz, let's hear what y'all's vanity units are. What everybody's out there. What are you working on? Anything or any projects that if you just found a way to work it in that you'd be doing them right now.
Oh, and chuck off the box games you want to see as well. That was a really cool question.
All right, we all have a good rest of y'all's night.
Take care.
Bye.
Make my day.